This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode number 283 of the Stacey West podcast. I'm Ben and this week I'm joined by Charlie. How are you doing, mate? Are you well?
I am very well, actually. It is Cheltenham Festival week, so I have been in front of the TV or in the pub for most of the week, focusing on the horses. But Tuesday was a little bit of an interesting day because I came back from Nottingham, came back to Lincoln quite early, about kind of 11:30 midday. I got into Lincoln, came home, went straight out to the pub for about 1 o'clock. Because it was the festival, I was watching the racing. So first Guinness was at 1:30.
Bloody hell.
To be fair, I only had like 3 or 4 pints before the football. But that was then turning up to the football and you're thinking, oh, God, you know, a bit tired and could be a long night. But nah, no chance is it going to be a long night. Although I say that, it was a long night because then came back home afterwards. And I don't know about anybody else. I couldn't fall asleep for quite a while. There was a little bit of an adrenaline rush, wasn't there?
Yeah, I could barely sleep on Tuesday. But no, it's been a pretty damn good week all round, with the exception of Gaz and Chris, because unfortunately they missed it on Tuesday. They're still under the weather, and I think they were bound to iFollow. So obviously, you know, from a humane, sensitive point of view, we wish Gaz and Chris all the best and hope they get well soon. But I mean, you know, they're just wussed out and they just couldn't be bothered. That's how it goes.
That's all it was.
But yeah, I mean, look, let's jump into it, because obviously, you know, 11 goals in 2 games is something that very, very infrequently happens in football, but it's happened for us. So we'll come, you know, let's just start talking about Tuesday night. I mean, going into it, I think confidence was obviously high coming off the back of the Barnsley game. And, you know, going from 3-0, you know, beating Shrewsbury 3-0, we'll take the Stevenage game out of the equation slightly, because it was a functional game that didn't do a whole lot to get everybody off the seats. But then going away to Barnsley, winning 5-1, the confidence suddenly skyrockets, doesn't it? And you're looking at a Cambridge team that are staring down relegation at the minute, and you think, on paper, we should be winning this comfortably. And then we went and absolutely dismantled them, which, I mean, nobody was really expecting that, were they?
No. And it's weird because I think you actually, like you say, you have to kind of start with Saturday. Now, yeah, Obviously, we did a full podcast dedicated to that game on Sunday, and obviously unbelievably enjoyable. We won a lot, but it's really weird because you're coming into this game, and this game as a singular is a 6-0 victory, and you think you'd be waxing lyrical just about this particular game, about how amazing it is and how over the top it is, if you like. But it's two games
in a row
that we have absolutely demolished a side. And, you know, we spoke about Barnsley being genuine. It sounds daft because we beat them 5-1, but they were one of the best sides I think we faced all season. Yeah. I thought they were brilliant for a lot of the game. Cambridge weren't that. Obviously, they weren't that. But they weren't. They were better than Shrewsbury. You know, I'm quite happy to put that out there. And we scored twice the amount of goals against Cambridge. I thought they were better than Shrewsbury. I didn't think they looked down and out, if you actually like it, too many points. But what we were was unbelievably dominant. Just another level. And it was funny because you're kind of talking to people before the game and such, you're bumping into people that maybe weren't at Barnsley, maybe struggled to get to the away games, whatever, for whatever reason. And they're going, oh, you know, what an amazing one it would have been to be at, and I bet that's one you'll never forget, and what was the feeling like, and all of that. And you're like, obviously, you're waxing lyrical about that. And then I remember my dad's mate who was sat there, because he was kind of saying that, oh, I really wish I was there, really wish I was there. That must have been amazing. And then at the end of choosing that, I'm like, well, now you know how I felt on Saturday. and that's exactly what it was. It was from the absolute first minute.
Yeah.
Wasn't just the fact that we were scoring. It was also the level of goals that we were scoring, again, the exact same as Saturday. It was the fact that some of the interchanging play in the middle of the park. I have not seen Lincoln City be so smooth on the ball as what they were on Tuesday night. And also Saturday, because they also deserve the credit for Saturday. Again, and I keep on harping back to it. Everything was perfect. And the word perfection, that term is thrown around all the time in football nowadays. You'll see one nice goal and say, that's a perfect goal. Well, is it because maybe the keeper could have done better? That was a perfect game. Yeah, but is it because they were a poor side? Tuesday night was perfect. Saturday wasn't perfect. We conceded. And the players didn't think it was perfect because they were fuming at the fact that we conceded. Tuesday night, that was perfection.
I think when you look at it, in context, when you look at back-to-back Saturday, Tuesday, I don't think you could get more perfect. You know, I mean, obviously, like you say, we could potentially have not conceded on Saturday, and that would have been, you know, the cream on the cake for that one. But I think, yeah, in terms of two results back-to-back, there was no player for me under an eight on Tuesday night. And again, on Saturday, it was just absolutely superb start to finish. I mean, We might as well get started on the goals now, because they're probably going to take us about a good 15 minutes to get through.
I can't remember the order of the goals. you're going to have to lead on this.
So, I mean, obviously Jack Moylan's first was after some really nice work from Lass. There is an argument, probably quite a weak argument, I'd say, that there was a foul in the build-up to it. But, you know, Lass plays the ball off to Moylan and he just absolutely took the net off with that first shot, and Gaz mentioned it in his write-up for the game. But as soon as that went in, any nerves that were there whatsoever just immediately settled. You think that's it? That's game over. You know, we've got this now. Because I mean, Cambridge haven't come back from, you know, 1-0 down away much, if at all, this season, and two, I just think it's been, the confidence is so high in the squad at the minute. If we get the first goal, we can just, you know, we can invite the pressure onto us, and we're not going to lose that game, especially, like I say, Tuesday night. So, yeah, I mean, Moylan's first was just a hell of a strike. The bank erupts. And from then on, it was kind of what's becoming business as usual. We then sort of go a little bit further on, and the only blight on Tuesday night came on about 20 minutes or so, when obviously Ben House goes down and he doesn't get straight back up, which immediately makes everybody a bit worried. And we'll come on to Michael Skubala's conference a little bit later on. But yeah, at the time, felt a little bit disconcerted, didn't it?
It did. And it's weird because there was such a high feeling before that. Mm. And then, like you said, Ben House does go down, stays down, and ends up having to be brought off. And at that point, I mean, your first feeling is in the short term, in terms of the game. okay, are we maybe going to now struggle for the rest of the game? Well, no, but we'll get onto that in a second. And then obviously it's a look to the long term. Now, I'll mention playoffs nice and early, because let's be honest, we need to.
Yeah.
I'm sure most people listening will have at least seen the score from Peterborough Stevenage last night. Mm-hmm. I know so many people were watching it, myself included. I think you were watching it as well, weren't you, Ben?
Yeah.
And actually wanting Peterborough to win. No, we were all just against Steve Evans.
That was it. I said, are we all pro posh? I was like, I prefer to see it as anti Evans, to be honest.
Yeah, but, no, and that's absolutely fine. And we will. But obviously, Peterborough did beat Stevenage, which means now going into Saturday, we are only 3 points behind Stevenage for sixth place. Now, we can all get carried, and we will all get carried away. I'm going to get carried away, but there's also now a kind of niggling worry in the back of my mind. Are we going to just fall short because of injuries? Now,
yeah,
it's a weird. So first of all, obviously we know the midfield, Ethan Hamilton, Ethan Ayrehim. Now, Danny Mandroy, who slotted into that number eight role next to Ethan Ayrehim. Sorry, I said Ethan Hamilton and Ethan Ayrehim, didn't I? I meant Ethan Hamilton injured and Conor McGrandall's injured.
Yeah.
Danny Mandroy is obviously slotted into that role next to Ethan Ayrehim absolutely brilliantly over these last couple of games. Mm-hmm. And I think the running that we've got, because we're playing sides that I think on paper are going to suit our attacking style at the minute, I think it's fine. If we were playing, you know, a Bolton, a Portsmouth, a Derby, maybe then we could be a little bit more worried about kind of that. But at the minute, you know, we said on the podcast the other week, let's just go for it. We're doing that and it's working well. So that's not too bad. I think we can just about manage that. We're not going to want another injury to that part of the pitch, but at the minute, I think we can just about manage that. Up front, obviously, Jack Moylan, Jack Lionel Messi Moylan or whatever name Cornell has now given him. And to be fair, this is the one time, Cornell, if you are listening, mate, I am more than happy to get on the bandwagon with you and start shouting the nicknames that you've given, because Jack Moylan absolutely deserves it. Obviously, we've got Joe Taylor up front, who is in absolute fine form as well. Freddie Draper, we'll get on to. There's a little bit of a potential issue with him, but it looks like he's now coming back, been back on the grass now. And then Ben House. Now, Ben House going down, I think he's one of our best strikers that we've had since, honestly, that we've had since I've been watching religiously. Because what he does is just so well-rounded that I think he's perfect against any opposition. So, you know, if we do end up losing him for a prolonged period, that is a massive, massive worry now for the rest of the season. And again, we'll kind of get onto what Skubala has specifically stated on that. So, but that is very much a bit of an issue. But Jovan, I just want to touch on Jovan. And I was going to do this at the end of the game when we kind of finish wrapping up the game. But seeing as we're mentioning now, Jovan came on for Ben House. That was without a shadow of a doubt Jovan's best performance in an Ipswich shirt.
100%.
Look, I know what people will say. Somebody who's maybe a little bit more cynical may turn around and go, well, it's not that difficult, is it? Now, on this
podcast, only Cambridge.
On this podcast, we've mentioned the fact that Jovan was thrust in the deep end quite early on this season, not just having to play up top in a Lincoln City side who were struggling with goals, but having to play up top in a Lincoln City side where he was on his own.
Yep.
Right? It was a terrible position for him to be in. Everybody at the club has acknowledged it. Jez George has said many times that probably hurt his development, but unfortunately we had no choice. But Tuesday night, he showed what he can do. He showed why him being in and around the first team squad and training every day with those players is helpful. Why we haven't decided to send him out alone. Not just because we might need him as a backup, but also because he can be used as a backup and go well there. Somebody commented in, I want to say it was the Discord, and sort of went, oh, I would have maybe expected Rico Hackett to move up top with Dylan Duffy to take the Rico role. That's fine, but we've got a striker on the bench. Let's utilise him.
It was a bit more like light, wasn't it?
We're already winning. Let's utilise it for a bit. Yeah. And I think it worked so well. His hold-up play was absolutely exceptional. He was able to press just like Ben House was against the likes of Barnsley and against Cambridge for the first, half an hour, was it, until he went off?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Jovan was absolutely exceptional. And he showed what he could do and why he wasn't the problem beforehand. It was simply the situation that he found himself in that was no making of his own. But that was kind of why maybe we weren't seeing the best of him in those kind of November, December.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm in full agreement. It was easily his best performance that I've seen in a, you know, in a Lincoln shirt. And I think the thing is, I think we would, if we'd not had the injury situation that we'd have, you know, that we've obviously suffered this season, I think we probably would have seen Jovan go out on loan at some stage during the season.
Absolutely.
To you know, get the experience, get the game time under his belt. It was just simply the fact that we needed bodies in the building. And like you say, you know, the kid's what, 19, 20? And he's, you know, he's leading the line in the League One side on his own. And I think in spite of, you know, it's easy to say it with hindsight, but I think we even said it at the time, he needs huge credit for what he managed to do at the time, because he, you know, he is still a young lad. He is still learning the trade, but he did an okay job doing what he was doing at the time. But yeah, I mean, I'll say easily his best game, but we'll move back into the game and Jack Moylan pops up with his second 5 minutes or 3 minutes after Ben House goes off, settling the nerves even further. And this was, again, you know, pretty decent move and a good finish from Jack, wasn't it? I think he's suddenly popping up on a lot of people's radars. And if Man City want to give us 100 million for him, then I suppose we'll have to make do with that, I guess.
It's funny because I'm not going to turn around and say, if I was a betting man, I've just been talking about the horse racing earlier. I had a bet on Tuesday night. And sometimes I have a little bet builder for Lincoln. Sometimes I don't bother. It's normally if there's a free bet in there. And there was. So I had a little free bet on Lincoln on Tuesday night. And it was Lincoln to win, Cambridge to not score. And then I went for, I think I went for last to score. Because, I put Ben House to score. And then obviously got injured and went off, because of course he did. That's the whole reason he got injured, by the way, was because I put a bet on him to score. But obviously I was looking through it before the game and I was thinking, Jack Moylan to score? I'm thinking, nah, it's too obvious. It's not going to happen again, is it? Like, he's had a good game, but let's give him a couple more games to see whether he can do that on a regular... Yeah, he can. So I'm going to bet on him on Saturday and now he's going to get injured.
apparently he was 16-1 to get a brace. And for him to get a hat trick was 300-1. So when that second goal went in, I bet there were a lot of bookies sweating a little bit. you know, particularly what, two goals within 25 minutes. I think, he looked really lively once again and, you know, rightly got the plaudits from a lot of people. But again, we go in at half time. It's 2-0. We don't necessarily feel like we're in danger of losing the game or even, you know, dropping points at this stage. And I think there was just an awful lot of positivity around the place yet again. And we come out within 3 minutes, Danny Mandroy has put a cross into the box and it's, let's be honest, it's hit Joe Taylor and it's gone in.
But I'll be there to score them.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, this is the big difference between now and earlier in the season and last season, you know, when we weren't winning that many games, you know, we were drawing a hell of a lot of games at home and we were just, you know, eking out little wins here and there because people weren't getting in those kinds of positions. You know, we weren't seeing strikers darting into the box and the crosses going in. It was always quite cagey. But, you know, like you say, you've got to be there to score them. Mandroy puts the ball in. He absolutely fired it in, to be fair. And then it, yeah, Taylor just bundles it over the line. And I think when you listen back to it, you kind of just hear the... It was a bit almost like a lackadaisical cheer, wasn't it? Everyone just sort of went, oh, hey, there we go, sort of, you know, result for that one. But, I mean, we've not really spoken about Joe Taylor yet. Obviously, we will do as he's got another one coming up. But another solid performance from him, you know, constantly harassing and pressing and just making himself a real, real nuisance. And I think it showed why he was one of, if not the most sought after striker in our division in the transfer window, hasn't it?
Chris said on this podcast the other week, week or two ago, and he turned around and said that if Luton, especially, it'll be a lot easier if Luton stay in the Prem.
Mm-hmm.
But we would absolutely snap the hand off for Joe Taylor next season on an 18-month loan at that point.
Yeah.
And I agreed. Mm-hmm. Thought that could be brilliant. This was even really before he was scoring properly, but you could tell there was very much a player in there.
Yeah.
And I think everybody knew he'll get one and then that'll be it. The floodgates will open. And it has. And now I think what Chris was saying is less potential transfer strategy, more now an absolute prayer that we can keep hold of Joe Taylor for another season. Because really, what are the chances of him not being in a championship side next season? Okay, maybe with us, but we're not going to get carried away. but he, absolutely outstanding. Not just his ability to run in behind, because that's very much what we saw against Peterborough and Derby, and actually against Wickham as well. It just wasn't really coming off because the players didn't quite know how to play with that yet.
Yeah.
But not just that, but like you say, his pressing is off the ball work. It's improved tenfold. Like, he's molded into that system. I'm using the word again, perfectly.
It
is outstanding the way that he's been able to come into this Lincoln City side. And yes, okay, we may have changed certain parts of our team to help suit him, of course, because that'll happen. The fact we've now got a two-striker formation, he said early on that he would prefer a two-striker formation anyway. Not saying he went into Skubala and said, play me in a two. Not how it worked. But we've obviously changed things slightly so that it suits him. But he's also managed to change himself and his play style to help suit us as well. So we've kind of bonded into this fantastic system that gets the best out of him and all of the players around him and the whole team. So again, a player who I think's got unbelievable amount of intelligence to be able to do something like that, which is the players that I think we want in our team.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think his, the fourth goal to me summed up exactly what we said about Joe Taylor when he was, in those early games, and he was, he had the one-on-ones and he was blasting it, and he was either putting it over, or I think it was two games in a row, wasn't it, where he fired them,
Derby
and pretty spectacularly over the bar. And you think, oh, if he just, took a breath and calmed himself, and we've seen since. I mean, it was almost a carbon copy of his goal. Who was it against the other week? Did he score against Shrewsbury? Which goal
I'm
mean?
Losing, I do, but I'm also losing track of who's scoring against who at the
moment. Yeah, absolutely. it was almost a copy of that. Gets the ball played to him from Jack Moylan, and he just takes two strides and he just lifts it, just dinks it over the keeper. And it's that moment when you think, oh, hang on a minute, is he going to leather it? Because there was a moment just before that, I think, as well, where Mandroyu again played him in and he tried to side foot it around the keeper, but I think he maybe just got his angles wrong a little bit and, the keeper made the save. Watching Joe Taylor play at the moment is just, it's an absolute pleasure. He's been phenomenal since he's come in, and I'm glad he's found his scoring boots, because it's proven very, very fruitful for us. And then, obviously the substitutes happened just before that. So Ioma came on, Duffy came on, and Bishop came on. I thought Bishop looked like he'd, not missed a beat when he came on. There was one moment when he had a really good run. And I think that led to a save. But then, corner comes in. Paddy O'Connor, of all people, as an absolutely vicious volley, comes off the keeper. Everyone's thinking, there we go, that's it. And then the ball's recycled, shot comes in, and Ioma just backheels it. And I could not be happier for TJ Ioma seeing that goal go in, because he's been out of the side through no fault of his own whatsoever. He's been, when he's been in the side, he's been great. He's been solid. I think we mentioned it a couple of times on the pod and, privately as well. He's just been unlucky that everybody else in that central defence has been, really on form. Obviously, he came off for last, so he was kind of in that wider position. But I mean, yeah, I'm delighted for TJ that he not only got some game time, but also found himself on the score sheet. And at this point, when you're 5-0 up after a 5-1 away win, you just kind of, you have to stop and take stock of everything, don't you?
It's weird because you start getting to those results and then the conversations around you turn into, when was the last time we did this? When was the last time we did that? And that is it. I mean, I'm trying to think back. Last time we scored 5 at home, I want to say, was Ipswich over that Christmas period where it was the 5-3 Tyler Walker.
5-3, yeah.
Yeah, I want to say that was the last time we scored 5 at home. 6 at home, could not tell you.
I remember.
And then you think back to when was the last time we won by 6 goals? Like, you know.
The one that's sticking in my head, I think it was Rochdale at home. I think we won 7-0.
Mm. So, again, it's like we're having to go back.
Yeah, a long time for that one.
A long, long time. And this is it. You just sat there in absolute awe and disbelief. I mean, Jesus, that 5th goal went in. Didn't even get really a chance to sit down again before the 6th goal went in.
No. And to be honest, at the time, I didn't realise who'd scored it. And I didn't realise it was Duffy that had got that, you know, got the 6th. But yeah, again, really good work from Dylan Duffy getting down the left-hand side, putting the shot in and reacting quickly on the rebound. Yeah, again, happy for Dylan because he's only being kept out of the side by a, you know, really informed Rico Hackett at the moment. Obviously the competition for places, it's going to be natural for any side. But when you've got a squad that, you know, let's be fair, is still a little bit depleted at the moment in terms of the midfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to an extent on Tuesday night, it was depleted up top as well. When you've got a squad that's missing players like that, all of a sudden, you know, the competition might let up in some areas, but in other areas of the pitch, it's just heating up. And yeah, everyone was on top form.
They all want to be on the pitch. I mean, it was said after the game on Saturday when Jack Moylan was like, I was quite pissed off. I wanted to start.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was more than open about that and then went on and scored 2 goals. Dylan Duffy and TJ Omer on Tuesday night apparently having a laugh and a joke about which one of them was going to score when they came on. Both of them did. You know, and there's clearly such a, you know, and I harped on about it most of the podcast on Sunday, about the togetherness and the bond and the love that's clearly there between all of these players and the fans and everybody at the club and Scubala. And I think actually, you know, we gave a good bit of credit last week to Chris Cohen. Mm-hmm. It was a conversation that me and Gaz had, I want to say it was last Thursday, about talking about Chris Cohen and, you know, just how great he must be as a part of this and how some of it must also be down to him and this and that. But actually, I want to give huge credit now to Tom Shaw, because Tom Shaw got the players massively together during the period where we didn't have a permanent manager, as we know. There were some brilliant games under him. I mean, Charlton at home, I think, will be remembered for a long, long time. The first home game since Kennedy had gone. And it was such a special night. And Tom Shaw was clearly a massive part of that, obviously. And now him to be assistant manager, and you just know that he's loved by the players and he loves the players. And he is that perfect link between players and management. And because you can see that from the outside, we spoke about Chris Cohen and it's, okay, what kind of role is he doing? We don't fully know. Is he a role between the manager and the players? Is he just up there with the manager in terms of in the players' eyes, that sort of thing? And how do they share responsibilities? But with Tom Shaw, it's so obvious that he is that perfect liaison between the two while still being able to be a fantastic assistant head coach, but also be able to have these great connections with the players. Again, it's a huge, huge credit to everybody at the club that what we seem to have in place at the minute really is special. And, you know, we talk about it. Something special is happening. Everybody knows that. I mean, Tuesday night, we were just stood there talking everybody after the game, and you're stopping every 20 seconds because you want to talk to everyone you know, everybody that sees us or that we see, and you just want to stop and you go, that was good, wasn't it? That was special. Yeah. And you just want to have a conversation with everyone because you never want to shut up about it. It was one of the latest I've been home from a game on Tuesday night for that exact reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a group chat at the minute with a bunch of friends that I've known for years and years and years, and they're all Premier League fans. They don't care about lower league football at all, and I'm the only one that's in there going, "Hey, we exist," you know, and that's something foreshadowing we'll touch on a little bit later. But when they start going, when that group chat starts to shift in the direction of talking about Lincoln City and it's not me that's making that decision, you know something's going on. And there was a message that I think we got at half time. And it was obviously, you know, we're 2-0 up at half time, and they sort of said, "So what's going on at Lincoln at the minute then, Ben?" I said, "Well, you know, we're what, 12 games in, 13 games in this year. We've scored 19 goals.
Yeah.
We've conceded 6. 2 of those were in the only game that we've lost. They're pretty impressive numbers." And then every time we scored, it was like, "We've scored 20. We've scored 21. Oh, we've scored 22 now." It was like just kept going and going. It was just unreal.
I want to just touch on that because, well, there's two things actually. There's one thing that I think you wanted to mention as well. I think we both wanted to mention.
Yep.
There was another one that kind of sparked a bit of a thought in my mind today, actually, was I was just scrolling through Twitter and the EFL, it was a League One Twitter account post, as they do, and it was they're posting sort of the top 10 goal-scoring sides in the division. Obviously, you've got the likes of Peterborough and Bolton and Barnsley and Derby near the top. Mm-hmm. But we're beyond that metric. We're in 10th. Now, okay, yeah, it's 10th. That's not exactly that special, is it? But it is when you bear in mind the first half of the season we had, you know, to be in 10th in that metric. And yes, obviously it does boost us up quite massively. I mean, if you take out those 11 goals, and obviously we're not taking out the 11 goals because we scored them, but if we take out those 11 goals, we've scored the same amount as Fleetwood, right? Who are down in like 18th in terms of that metric and obviously in the relegation zone. But we've scored those 11. We're now up in 10th in that metric, scoring 51 goals, conceding only 33. We have got one of the best defences in the league, second best defence in the league in terms of goals conceded, which means our goal difference, plus 18. I mean, obviously, playoff season was very much a bit of an outlier, of course, but that's one of the best goal differences we've had in recent years.
Yeah,
plus 18. What a swing that is. And let's also bear in mind Oxford. 5-0 loss on Tuesday night up to Bolton. An 11-goal difference swing just in one night to one of the sides that we're potentially chasing down.
Yeah, that was what I wanted to talk about because all of a sudden, you know, we've gone from, you know, I think we were all in the same boat a couple of weeks ago and it's like, right, you know, we've drawn against Stevenage, that's it. We'll be a League One side next season. Let's just have some fun towards the end of the season. However, I think deep down there was still the hope. And you think, well, Stevenage and Barnsley, you're probably looking at 4 points from those. If you can get 4 points from those, it's probably still on. But just the manner of those victories has truly kept the playoff dream alive for a lot of people at the moment. But when you get to this stage of the season, goal difference suddenly becomes something that everybody starts looking at. And like you say, Oxford are in and around it with us. They are on the verge of the playoffs. And you think, suddenly there's that swing of 11 goals. You know, we've suddenly gained 11 in terms of goal difference on Oxford in a single night. It is absolutely crazy to think that that's happened. But it's things like that, that when they start falling into place, everything else just starts to fall into place as well and starts to click. I mean, I think the one real chance that Cambridge had on Tuesday night was that they hit the bar from a couple of yards out. It kind of sprung up and cannoned back off the bar straight into Jensen's arms. Moments like that, admittedly, you know, not when you're 6-0 up, but moments like that tends to be an indicator of where your looks are at the moment and, you know, how things are either going for you or they aren't. And I just think at the minute, everything seems to be falling for us.
It is. And, you know, we are obviously picking apart Tuesday night. And Saturday as well. I mean, on the podcast on Sunday, I turned around and went, you're not going to get objective analysis because we're just going to be here purring over some of the goals that were scored and the way that we played and all of that. But you're looking at our last four matches, right? Stevenage, 0-0 draw at home, right? That was the second of the four. We'll get to the first in a second. But Stevenage, 0-0 draw at home. Yeah, all right. Not exactly the greatest, but they're a really tough Stevenage side. They know exactly how to set up against most teams in this division. There's an argument there that we potentially could have won, but actually I think a 0-0 draw was probably the fair result. We kept a clean sheet against a side like that. It's fine. You know, we didn't drop any, we didn't sort of concede points to them, as in they didn't earn any more than us. But before then, 3-0 home to Shrewsbury. Immense night in terms of the performance, obviously the result, just everything, immaculate. Since then, 5-1, 6-0. It's not like any of these results are in isolation.
No.
We're doing this on such a regular basis at the minute. And I mentioned on Twitter, it must have been after we'd... I'm trying to think when it was. I think it was before Port Vale, or maybe it was after the Port Vale game. And I basically just put, I can't see where the next loss is coming from.
No.
And I'm still at that point, because it's not just that we're scraping by and getting results to go on this amazing unbeaten run. It's the fact that we're doing it emphatically. And, you know, it's such a joy to be a Lincoln fan right now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But look, I'm sure that we could talk forever about Tuesday night.
Can we? Please. Do we have to move on?
We're nearly on 35 minutes, which is insane, considering it feels like it's flown by, because I'm just having fun reliving a 6-0 victory, which is,
I mean, this podcast has also done 45 minutes on 0-0 draws. So, technically, we could go on for about 5 hours.
But look, we will move on, because obviously, you know, there is a little bit more to talk about. Not a huge amount coming out of the club this week. But there is some stuff in the wider footballing circles. Next bit of news that we have that kind of ties into two. The Oxford game has been postponed until the 16th of April. So it will be another game under the lights. And suddenly, that becomes a much more enticing match, doesn't it, Charlie?
It does. On the one hand, what's that? That's going to be our third to last game of the season, I believe.
Yep.
I think it's going to be Oxford away the Tuesday, then Cheltenham away the Saturday, followed by Portsmouth at home on the final weekend, whatever day that ends up, they decide they're going to put that. Although, to be fair, it would be nice of them to like tell us pretty soon, but it's the EFL. So, yeah, that is going to be potentially absolutely massive now. But also, it getting postponed, I'm quite a fan of. Because first of all, it means that there's going to be this massive game to look forward to and all of this. And we can hopefully maybe take a few more, even though it's a choosing out, we could probably take a few more, because it could end up being, like we say, this massive game. But we've obviously mentioned a couple of the injury issues and players being in and out of fitness.
This is it.
We're now going to have two weeks on the training pitch to be able to get lads back on the grass. They can maybe have a couple of days off as well, rejuvenate a little bit, because yes, okay, we have been on an amazing run of form and all of that, but it might be nice for them to sort of recoup. Also, when was the last time? What happened the last time we had 12, 13 days off without a game? You know, we ended up coming back and that was the start of this run.
Yeah.
Flip side of that, we want to keep on playing games whilst we're winning.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be missing games. So it's a double-edged sword. It's on the one hand, it could be absolutely fantastic. We've got this great break. We can be getting players back and all this. Same time, you'd never want that momentum to drop. But I'm probably more in the former camp. Let's take
I think I agree. Getting players that, you know, maybe borderline fit at the minute. Obviously, I think we're obviously ruling McGrandles and Ethan Hamilton out of the situation. But if, you know, it means that we get, you know, Ben House rested for a week, we get Freddie Draper rested for another week, and it's like, okay, even if they play a part in the game on Saturday, it means that they can get through Saturday and then recover fully before the next game. So I'm for it. Obviously, one player that's not going to have a huge amount of rest and recuperation is Sean Rowan. He has been called up for the Ireland under-21s, so congrats to Sean on that one. Right, I think we're going to take a little break there. And when we come back, we'll talk about a couple of bits, and then we'll look ahead to Bristol Rovers on Saturday. So here is a very short break, and I believe Gaz is going to be trying to flog you a double quarter pounder with cheese. So enjoy that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there we go, we are back from our little break. As I say, it's probably, probably a Mackey's ad or something else, but if not, you know, hey, that's how it goes. But before we... before we start looking into to Saturday, there was something that's kind of affecting the wider footballing world. Came out on Wednesday, which there's been a lot of talk about this, which is obviously the Premier League and the new funding deal for the EFL. They've dragged their heels on it for an awful long time, and I think the threat of the independent regulator coming in and all of the rest of it doesn't seem to be forcing their hands at all, does it? It's just a bit of a mess.
It is, and I'm not surprised. And we sort of knew and expected all of this, and it's been happening now for so long that it's not really anything new in a way, because it's just a new cycle of the same story.
Yeah.
So it is difficult. What's frustrating is some of the teams that are voting
against,
you know, and obviously one of those, for example, being Bournemouth.
I wanted to have a little bit of a whinge about this, and it's like I know that there's kind of a semi-political element to it all, because obviously,
it's purely political.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think purely from a business point of view, some of the arguments kind of make sense if you look at it as a purely capitalist view of football, which I would be pretty sure that even people that I fundamentally disagree with, you know, on the political scale, would agree that when it comes to football, that wouldn't necessarily sit right.
You're just a commie.
I'm just... but the thing is, right, the amount of talent that is currently in the Premier League that, you know, sharpen the skills at a lower level is clear. I mean, you've got, just in terms of players that have come through our club, you've got Morgan Rogers, you've got Brennan Johnson, you've got Harry Toffolo. Alongside that, you've got the likes of Ivan Toney, you've got Ollie Watkins. You know, they cut the teeth at our level. And what happens if the pyramid collapses underneath the Premier League because clubs go bust? You know, it's going to be detrimental to them, because they then can't go and cherry pick those players. And when they then turn around and say, oh, the reason clubs are going bust is because they're overspending, they've got to ask the question of why are they overspending? And it's like, it's to get to the Premier League. When you've got the de facto voice in football finance with Kieran Maguire saying that, oh, Lincoln are one of the good guys and the good guys are losing £3 million a year, then something's clearly rotten at the core of the game. And it's something that we all know about. But one thing I did find really interesting about this was the difference in reaction to the Premier League when the Super League was, you know, proposed. When the Super League got proposed, because it was their money that was under threat, you know, they were going to ban all the clubs involved from the Premier League. They were going to make sure that they never played in England again and all this. But as soon as it's a fraction of their income that's being given to a lower league side, you know, it's a tiny fraction of what they'd receive from the TV deal, let alone anything else. They just close ranks and that's it. Immediately, it's a no. But it's interesting that you mentioned Bournemouth, because that was the one that really, like, it sickened me.
It irked a lot of people. And for the right reason as well, because...
Yeah. I mean,
it is purely political. And that's the problem. That is the fundamental problem here. It's not that we're talking football. We're not talking just about the top teams wanting to stay at the top. Of course, that's a massive part of it, and that is the main reason. But it's not just from a purely footballing point of view either. It's purely political of, well, why should we be giving that up? Now,
I mean,
if that's what you want to agree, if that's what you want to think, that's absolutely fine. But it's wrong, first of all. Second of all, we'll just make your sort of piece of the pie smaller. Well, instead of making the piece of the pie smaller, we'll just make the whole pie smaller then. Because that's now what we need to do. We're not going to have cooperation, which now means we're going to have to go in and take it by force.
No. I mean, I can understand, again, from a purely business, money-oriented point of view, I can understand the big boys in the Premier League wanting, you know, a closed shop. But Bournemouth...
But what I don't understand is them wanting it, though. I don't understand it. Because
The thing is... Yeah, but I think...
It's better for you.
Yeah, it always is. But, you know, I think there was a big hint about... somebody pointed out that all of the clubs that have voted no have got American owners. Now, obviously, we're in a situation where we have a majority American shareholder, but his view on football very much aligns with everybody else's, unless he's an exceptional liar and is, you know, going to pull the wool over everybody's eyes for multiple years and, you know, not let it slip.
He's an American, so it must be. Those Americans, they're as bad as the Irish players.
Yeah. steady. but I mean, the thing is, like, Bournemouth have been at the very bottom. You know, they almost went pop. They've seen how difficult it is to claw and scratch the way out of the basement and get to the top. And they got to the promised land. You know, they got to the Premier League. Like, they did it at a point where money in football was crazy, but it wasn't at the level that it is now. I mean, you've got nation states buying football clubs and paying players millions of pounds a week. Like, they did it at the point where that wasn't a thing. But now they've got to that pinnacle. They've got to the top of the pyramid. They just want to pull the ladder up and deny every other club the opportunity to potentially follow their, you know, follow in their footsteps. It's just a spit in the face to every single club that they've ever played against in the Football League. And, you know, pardon my French, but it fucking makes me sick. Really does. So
you've got it perfect. It is a spit in the face. It's as simple as that. But like I say, I'm not, do you know what? I saw it, wasn't actually too bothered, because as angering as it is,
yeah,
and it is, I'm also like sort of expected this.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely expected it.
We're going around in circles. We've had this sort of news has come out of the Premier League 5 or 6 times a year at the minute, where they're fundamentally opposed to the new deal and they'll pick apart problems. And you'll have bloody Richard Masters going in front of sort of select committees in Parliament.
Well, but we find Everton.
This is it. And then what they'll do is they'll specifically bring charges the day before he goes and does these speeches, which is what he's done now 4 times, I believe, where he's specifically timed them and all of these sorts of things. Clearly, there's a massive fundamental problem. We know what it is. It's not just the clubs. To be fair, it's the whole organisation. Like I said, Richard Masters is one of the worst. I mean, Rick Parry used to be involved in the Premier League and it's now dropped down to the EFL. So he's now fighting against his old organisation. But look, like I say, this isn't the end of a road in any way, shape or form. It's just another hurdle that I think we expect to be coming. It's not like we've fallen over a pothole that we didn't see. We knew this was coming. So I'm just trying not to kind of get angered by it.
It doesn't make it any less shit. But
No, not at all.
It's just frustrating.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the wider football
Speaking of frustrating.
Yeah, speaking of frustrations, obviously we mentioned Ben House going off on Saturday and Freddie Draper didn't start or appear on the bench on Tuesday night. So Marcus Cabala has been speaking in his press conference today as we record about the potential of them starting on Saturday. Freddie Draper sounds the more likely to start, but it does sound like Ben House may be involved. Draper's been on the grass today, and he's hoping that Ben House gets up back on the grass tomorrow. So hopefully good news, Charlie.
Yeah, I think there's two sides to this. Obviously, we mentioned the fact that we've got this two-week break coming up after Saturday. Well, 2 week, 13 days. So do we potentially try and rush a player back who's not 100% ready, knowing they can then recover for longer after? Or do we say, okay, Bristol Rovers at home, we've got momentum, let's see if we can win without them and not push too much. Ben House's one is probably a lot more worrying because specifically it was mentioned by Skibala that obviously he could end up still having to have a scan. I'll have to see how it settles. Not 100% sure on that. A little bit worrying. With Freddie Draper, it, like you say, he's back on the grass and should be with the team tomorrow. So that is sounding a lot more promising. I think if you're having a player train with the team for the first time again on Tuesday, on Friday before a game, I doubt he'll start, if I'm honest. I wouldn't...
Draper or House?
Draper.
Okay. Yeah.
I doubt Draper. I honestly doubt Draper would start because there's an argument. I don't really think there's much of a need to rush him.
Yeah,
I think if we can get a few more players in, potentially even give Jovan a start. You know, I don't think he didn't exactly do himself any harm on Tuesday night.
No,
let's have him next to Taylor with Moylan in behind. Yeah. Why not? Let's just give it a go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like we've said, it was his best game in Lincolnshire on Tuesday night. So I would not begrudge him a start at all. But let's come on to a full preview then, because we are nearly at 50 minutes. So I think the best thing to probably do at this stage, and it's definitely not because we're recording earlier and before Charlie's going out. Before Charlie's doing the preview and yeah. I'm going out tonight. Definitely nothing to do with that. But we won't be putting the preview in this in the podcast.
So basically, guys, Ben was supposed to be editing up the podcast and putting the preview in after it's done, and he's just decided he can't be arsed. It's literally all it is.
That is not true.
Like, it's not like I was also...
It's not like I booked the tickets in November or anything, is it?
That's not the point. It's also not the fact that I was going to be getting... I was going to sort of get access to the Acast and do it myself, but for some reason, Gaz's thing isn't working. So,
So Charlie is going to be speaking to Matt from the Real EFL.
Yeah, so I'm going to be having a chat with Matt Isles. Matt is one of the League One podcast hosts over at the Real EFL. I do that podcast with Matt a good few times now. Really, really good guy to be speaking to. Bristol Rovers fan, obviously. He's also one of the ITV commentators on their Football League highlights show as well.
Okay.
And like I say, he's very, very knowledgeable, great guy. So be sure to go check that out. That will be out by hopefully 8:30 tonight.
There we go. So yeah, get that checked out. But let's talk about Bristol Rovers then, because they are a team that is difficult to predict in terms of what we expect. Their results have seemingly been all over the shop, and they don't have any consistency. So what are we expecting from Saturday, Charlie? I mean, obviously, given that our past seven, past six games have been 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 0-0, 5-1 and 6-0, I'm predicting it's going to be a 7-1 victory. That's probably a daft one to think about.
Right, so now we're losing 1-0. Thanks for that. Look, I'll be predicting us a win. You know, yeah. I'll say that from the get-go. I said earlier, I'm struggling to see where the next loss is coming from. I'm a little bit worried about injuries, but I still think we're going to be able to get over the line against Bristol Rovers, and it's no slight on them. It's more just a compliment to us. Now, you very much had it right. They are a very, very inconsistent side. I said off air, and I said it to Matt Isles on the Real EFL podcast a few weeks back, that Bristol Rovers remind me a lot of Lincoln under Mark Kennedy, mm-hmm. in the inconsistency of results, the fact that we can go ahead, get some great results against sides that maybe you're not expected to beat, and then you're losing silly games. For example, if you just look at some of their recent games, I mean, they won away at Leyton Orient 1-0. Leyton Orient, who we know are a good side, a very solid side.
And they're down to 10 as well.
Exactly, but they also lost to Burton Albion at home only a few weeks ago as well. They lost to Fleetwood at home, but they won away at Stevenage. This is what it's been like very much with Bristol Rovers most of the season. If they could sort their inconsistency out, they'd probably be a few points higher and be in and around where we are right now. But they're not. They are just unbelievably inconsistent. They struggle against certain types of sides. I think if we go, well, I said go there, we're playing at the bank, try and play out, make sure we play an hour game, keep hold of the ball, and basically stop them from getting forward, obviously, but also be able to play the same kind of passing moves that we have done recently, I think we'll be in for a real good one. They also play a fullback. Now, you may have heard on the podcast it's spoken a lot, Chris brings it up a lot, about overloads in attack. So when we go forward, we always want to have one more player than what they have in their defence. Now, if they're playing a fullback, we will have five going forward, because you'll have Lasse Sørensen and Rico Hackett as the wing-backs, and then you will also have, let's say, it was what I was saying earlier, and Jack Moylan in behind, Joe Taylor and Jovan Mokama or Freddie Draper, or whoever's going to play that other sort of striker role. We would probably have five going forward. Also, bear in mind that we could end up having Danny Mandraw, you want to bomb on forward a little bit more as well. Maybe Ethan Aaron sort of sitting a little bit further back, so that we always have four ready to defend. If they came forward with, they play 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-2, realistically, they'll only be pushing forward with a four if they're trying to break. So we could always have one man-to-man on that. So again, I feel like this is one of those where we could very much choke them out quite early, get on the front foot. I think it'll go the exact same way that it's gone for quite a lot of our games recently. First 20 minutes, you'll see us going at it. Wouldn't be too surprised to see us get a goal early on again. Let's say that doesn't happen, or even if it does, maybe they get back into the game for the second half of the first half. I'm not really that worried about them coming forward. You know, yes, they can score goals, but it's hardly outstanding goal scoring form. Like, they've scored less than us. They've only scored 48. They concede 52. We hardly concede. Lincoln winning, clean sheet.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I mean, looking through the lineup, looking through the stats, it seems like if you nullify one player, then that's probably going to be a lot of their goal threat out of the way, isn't it? I mean, you know, Chris Martin, as well as being the front man for Coldplay, currently has 15 goals for the season. there we go. Sorry.
I'm disappointed.
I know it's the obvious
joke. The only reason I'm disappointed is because of how many times that joke gets made in no other podcast.
I know, it's the obvious one, but not it. It's fun. And then I think the next top scorer is Anthony Evans on 6. From midfield, and Luke Thomas on 5 from midfield as well. So, yeah, like you say, doesn't seem like there's a huge amount of goal threat there. Although, as we know, you know, that's a point actually. Is Marquis still with them?
Is who, sorry?
John Marquis.
Yes, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, if he starts, he'll score. We know that one. Yeah. But look, I'm in the boat at the minute that nothing is going to knock this side's confidence. Yeah, everybody, it's clear that everybody is together. You know, that we talk about the small margins in football, and you know, or the fine margins in football, but it's also the intangible stuff. You know, you look at the way that we've been playing and the way that everybody just interacts with each other. I mean, you look at all of Jack Moylan's interview after Barnsley. You know, he stood there, and you've got. Was it Jack Burrows and Sean Rowan behind him? Was it Rowan?
Yeah.
You know, you've got the players just having banter with each other while they're trying to do the press stuff. It's the kind of thing that you didn't necessarily see under Kennedy. But the togetherness in this squad at the moment, it really does remind me of Keith's era, because it was Keith's era where, you know, we were outperforming where we should have been based on the players that we had because of that team spirit, because of that, you know, tight dressing room. But I think now we have that tight dressing room, but we also have a much, and again, no disrespect to the players in that time, but we have a much better squad than we did at that point as well. And when you combine those two things, I can't see us losing the game on Saturday.
No. Neither, quite frankly. Just neither, because everything is going for us at the minute. And that's not just luck, but that is us making our own luck.
Yeah.
And that is what is so great. Something special is happening. I have full faith in Michael Skubala. Mm-hmm. I have faith in him from the early get-go. I also had faith in Mark Kennedy from the get-go. I still had faith in Michael Appleton halfway through his final season.
Yep.
I never really lost faith in Michael Appleton. I just knew that he lost the fan base, and I thought that was a very difficult position to try and come back from. So, yeah. But Michael Skubala, he's doing everything that you want on the pitch, but he's doing everything that you want off the pitch. He's making fans fall in love with him and his team without ever making it about him. That is one thing that you get so much. It is never, ever about him. But I also, I do just want to mention his, well, the article on him, and that he was obviously...
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
...in the coach's voice.
Yeah.
Because you read articles like that about Premier League managers, and it's saying, oh, well, it's clear how they've got to the top.
Yeah.
We're reading that article about a manager that we've currently got, and it isn't just words. That's the thing. It's not just, okay, well, this is what we want to do, but he's actually showing exactly how it's being done on a week-by-week basis at the minute, because we are, and it's not just because we're winning. Obviously, it's easier because we're winning. But even from the early stages, we could see what it was that he wanted to implement in his teams.
Yeah.
He now had the players to do that coming out of January, going into February, and now this run that we're on. So much of that must obviously go down to him. And it's extraordinary when you've got a manager like that that is yours on a long-term contract.
Yeah.
And we talk about players and about how, oh, we really don't want someone like Ethan Aaron to be poached. Oh, we're maybe a bit worried about Ben House, that sort of thing. Absolutely. We still are. Like, definitely don't want them guys to get poached. They could go if it means keeping Michael Skubala. Please.
Because, I mean, the thing is, so the argument there...
to keep him.
Yeah, the argument there is that everybody knows that if you're playing in League One and you are of a good enough standard, your career is going to go from strength to strength, and you are going to go either to the Championship or to the Premier League. And that applies whether you're a goalkeeper, a defender, a striker, a midfielder, a coach, an assistant coach, a physio, whatever it is. League One is it's that kind of stepping stone for a lot of players. And that's going to hurt if people hear that, because, oh, well, that just means they're just using us to get ahead. It's like, yeah, it's a job. That's what you do. You do the best you can to get the best job you can possibly get. Now, I was saying this to somebody the other day. If you have the kind of contracts that we seem to be putting players on at the moment, with the recruitment team that we have, we're going to be able to say in the summer, if players want to go, that they will command high fees, which will then give us a bit of a war chest. My assumption is that that applies to the backroom staff as well. So if you know, if a Championship club or a Premier League club, let's say, you know, getting ahead of myself, but if a Premier League club want to come in and poach Michael Skubala, it's like, cool, right, that'll be £3 million or whatever it is from that point. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it doesn't look daft, because, yes, it was a risk taking him on, or not a risk, sorry, it was a gamble taking him on, but it's paying itself back now. He's just been superb. And I think the way that we've seen him evolve from being difficult to beat to all of a sudden being outright difficult to play against, it's exactly what he said he wanted to do. And it was building on that foundation of, right, well, we know that we've got a good defence. We just need to get the pieces in place. And then all of a sudden, we've got a good football team. And it's fantastic. And to be fair, there is actually a really good Twitter thread as well.
Yes, that, there is.
I think Chris put in our group chat, and somebody else, excuse me, has shared in the Discord, from HCFootball01.
A very good account, anyway. Definitely give that one a follow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've only seen that thread, to be fair. But yeah, looking through that, and it goes over a lot of stuff that Skibala's brought in from his experience in futsal, his experience in football, and the fact that he's, you know, I think we said at the time, there's definitely something about him that Leeds gave him the reins when they went to Old Trafford. And we're starting to see why. he's well, Gary said it in his article. He said it on the title of the article that something special is happening at Central Bank at the moment. And yeah, it's really hard to disagree. So let's have a score for Saturday then, Charlie.
I'm going to go for exactly what I did against Cambridge because it went well. 2-0.
Okay. I'm going to say a disappointing 3-0. Because the way it was...
Okay, now you're just getting complacent.
No, I kid, of course. No, I think at the minute, if the confidence stays in the squad and we keep going the way we are doing, I think we could turn them over. I don't think we're going to dismantle them in the same way that we have done a couple of other teams recently, but I think, yeah, we're in for a decent scoreline on Saturday, hopefully. And, of course, it is Kids for a Quid as well, so should have a bit of a bumper atmosphere.
I believe it's already getting close on ticket sales from what I can gather. A lot of the home areas are selling very, very well, and the Stacey West has been opened up to home fans as well.
Yep.
Let's get the place rocking. The lads deserve it.
Yeah, let's fill it. Let's absolutely pack the bank on Saturday because it'll be superb. So that is probably going to about do us. We've hit over an hour now, but the couple of things that one thing that I wanted to plug and something else that I wanted to say. I mean, first thing, just wanted to say thank you to Adam Chantry, who has moved on from the football club to go and work at Pastures New. He's been a massive help to myself and the whole podcast crew getting stuff sorted out. Just wanted to say thank you to Adam for that, all that stuff there. He did a lot of stuff in the with the 200 Club and things like that. He did all the interviews with the players after the games there. But the other thing as well, if you have missed it, I don't really know how you'd miss it because I think Gaz has plugged it quite a lot. There are Stacey West running shirts available.
Do you run?
Badly. the running shirts are available. They are £20. All the profit is going straight to the foundation as part of our 10K fundraising. You know what? I had the nicest yet weirdest compliment on Tuesday night. Someone said, "Oh, you know, I was going to say something, but I didn't want to say anything in case you'd been ill." About, I was like, "Okay."
I half thought it when you said you got the weirdest compliment, it was just going to be someone come up to you and go, "You don't look fat anymore."
I mean, it may as well have been, but yeah, somebody just went, "Oh, yeah, I didn't want to say anything in case you'd been ill." So, all right, I'll take it.
At least they're being considerate.
Yeah, but look, it's I think it's going fairly well for most of us. We are what, 5 weeks, 4 weeks away now?
Four weeks on Sunday, which is unbelievably worrying. I am looking forward to that pint in the pub afterwards.
Can you do it in Heelys?
If you're doing in Heelys, then I'm
just stand behind Chris with a lead.
To be fair, I might need to do that anyway. at least I won't get lost that way.
No, but look, it's massively appreciated. Everybody that's sponsored us so far, check the website for the links and everything. I'm sure there'll be plenty more plugs before the big day itself, which I believe is the 14th of April. So it is indeed a month away exactly. So, right. That is going to do us for this episode of the Stacey West podcast. I am off to the engine shed to see Feeder for the evening, and Charlie is going to plan his bets ahead of Cheltenham tomorrow, I'm guessing.
No, they're already picked.
Oh, okay.
They're already done. What am I doing? I'm doing nothing, actually. Well, I'm obviously the preview, and I've got
a couple of
articles to write up. So that's going to be an enjoyable one, and obviously international break next week. But we're not going anywhere, are we? But we're not going to say what.
No, we're working on something.
We may have one or two little things in the pipeline for that. So
indeed. Well, there's the tease. But until then, I believe it's yourself and Chris on Sunday.
I believe as much. Well, it isn't you, and I don't think it's Gary. So.
Well, no, it's not me. It's my birthday on Sunday, and I'm going to be probably drunk. And Gary is...
it doesn't stop Gary.
that's very true. I believe Gary is going to be abroad, in a very, very sunny place. So, yeah, Charlie and Chris on Sunday, and until next time, we will see you soon. And, of course, up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
It's the 90th minute, and all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.